From kilometer 550 on the Tour de Franchi Ultra in Mexico. Welcome to the GCN show.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, 19-year-old Paul Sexas has confirmed he will be racing this year's Tour de France. Is it too much too early? Will there be too much pressure on a Frenchman at the biggest race on the planet? Or was it the right decision for one of the most talented young riders we have ever seen?
We discuss. We've also got news, gossip, and a million new gravel bikes from the Tracker, one of the biggest gravel events in the world.
It's four gravel bikes, see?
It doesn't sound quite as good as a million, though, does it?
No.
You are right. Plus, how Tadej Pogacar got addicted to being a gym bro. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that Alex Payton was not ready to take on the Tracker 200. And we know that because he said so on his Strava upload.
Strava, still using that app?
Some people still are, believe it or not, Si. Scenes. We could also tell he wasn't ready for it by his face at the end of the race.
Yes. Now, for those worried, he did turn up for work today, albeit a broken man. Yep. And he did record a video whilst racing the Tracker, and that'll be out for you this weekend.
Look forward to that. We also learned last week that the Netherlands is controversial, e-bikes are controversial, helmets are controversial, and old people are controversial. That is judging from the many comments left under last week's GCN show.
Yeah, we will dive into it in more detail soon, but I've got to say, I like this comment from Oxen Cycling Net. They said, if Dutch cycling casualty figures include people who have just fallen off their bike, which they do, are they including the equivalent of Florida golf syndrome, where there are quite a lot of old people who die whilst playing golf in Florida, simply because there are a lot of old people spending a lot of time playing golf in Florida?
Well, I had a look, Si, and apparently most golfing deaths are due to golf cart crashes and some lightning strikes. Hmm. Oh, and one person who was tragically killed after being eaten by an alligator in 2023.
Good Lord. Puts me off golf. Yeah. We should have saved that as a nugget for the end of the show, shouldn't we? But we do have one about big cats, remember?
Yes, remember. Finally this week, we learned that Paul Sexas is racing this year's Tour de France in what will be the first Grand Tour for the teenager.
That's a bonkers statement in itself,
isn't
it, really? And it ends the speculation as to whether he would go straight in at the deep end or head to the Vuelta instead to get the experience of a three-week race without the same pressure. Like a soft Grand Tour, isn't
it? Kind of, yeah. I mean, I don't remember ever reading so much debate about whether or not a rider would be racing a Grand Tour before now. But you can kind of see why. Sexas is arguably the most talented teenager that the sport has ever seen.
Yeah, he has already taken 7 wins this season, and big ones at that. 3 stages in the overall at the Tour of the Basque Country, a stage of Tour of the Algarve, the Forn Ardèche Classic, and La Flèche Wallonne.
But on top of all of that, he was the last rider on Pogacar's wheel at both Strade Bianche and Liège-Bastogne-Liège. And I think it was those two rides, really, that got people's attention the most.
Yeah, rightly so, because it's not often that anyone can keep up with Tadej Pogacar when he really lays down the power, let alone a teenager who only rode his first pro race 15 months ago.
Unbelievable, really, isn't it? Actually, before we go on, I'm already preempting the comments side, because there have been a few in recent weeks on this show and the Racing News show saying it should be pronounced Sexas, because he's of a Portuguese descent. We're just saying it how he says it. It's on his Pro Cycling Stats page. So if you think he's wrong, tell him, not us. You got it wrong, Paul.
Yeah. Nice passive-aggressive.
Was a bit passive-aggressive, wasn't it? Maybe I was a little bit over the top.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it is quite annoying if someone says that you're saying it wrong when you've actually done the research to find out how he says his own name.
Exactly, yeah.
So there you go.
Not that I mean, we do get names wrong a lot, but we do try our
best. Not that one, though. Dan got it right.
Yeah, and we're definitely saying Paul right.
Paul.
Oh, yeah, maybe we're not.
Right, anyway, back to the subject of the Tour of France, shall we? I guess the first question is why he wouldn't do it. Now, of all the riders in the world, only Tadej Pogacar has won more World Tour races this season. So he's clearly got the pedigree and the power.
Well, what most people point to when they say he shouldn't compete there, I think, is the pressure he'll be under. I can see their point. It's well known, obviously, that a French man hasn't won the race since 1985, so that's 41 years of hurt. And so the French, and many others to be fair, are waiting in great anticipation for the rider who's eventually going to break that drought.
Yeah, as such, there was a huge amount of pressure on Thibaut Pinot, wasn't it? And Romain Bardet, when both finished on the final podium at a relatively young age. At least what felt like a young age at the time.
It did, didn't it? Yeah, funny that. Bardet was actually 25 when he finished second at the Tour, which is his first Tour podium. Whilst Thibaut Pinot, he'd just turned 24.
How times change, eh?
Yeah, it did feel like they were so young at the time.
Yeah, like they had their whole careers in front of them.
Kind of did, yeah.
Both, we should say, they had the pressure of a nation on their shoulders from that point on. And whilst their careers were very successful, Pinot never finished on the podium of a Grand Tour again, whilst Bardet took third 1 year after his second place, and then also never finished on the podium of a Grand Tour again.
No, strange, isn't it? The other argument against Sexas competing at the Tour de France at such a young age is that he might dig himself into a physical hole that he's never able to climb back out of. That the race is so long and so brutal, you risk burning a very young rider out.
I mean, it sounds logical, right? But it doesn't ring true for Sexas, at least in our opinion anyway, because with the form that he's shown this season, he could cruise around for 3 weeks with no trouble at all, could he? Now, of course, he will be racing hard and doing his best rather than cruising around, but he appears to have more reserves than most riders many years his senior.
Completely agree. Plus, the race isn't the test of human endurance that it once was. I mean, there used to be like split days back in the day and then back-to-back 250k days in the mountains that often took over 7 hours to complete. That was, I would say, too much for youngsters in the past, particularly when they were drastically underfueled, as we now know.
Yeah. Now, this year, there is only one stage over 200 kilometres. And with the speeds they go now, each road stage will be, on average, about 4 hours, won't it? So still tough, of course, eminently doable.
I'd say so, yeah. Back to the pressure thing, though, briefly. I do get it. It's not just the French media, but the world media that will be writing stories about Paul Sexas every single day. However, he strikes me as a young man with a very mature head on his shoulders. Plus, I don't think there are many people who are expecting him to win the Tour de France.
No. Maybe this is the race that he can do where he's got the least amount of pressure on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And I guess the counter-argument is that if he does crack, perhaps losing time on GC one day and then refocusing on stage wins or the mountains jersey, people are going to speculate that he is not a Grand Tour rider, right? And it would be unfair because he has got a lot of time to develop, but you can definitely see people saying that, can't you?
I think you are right, though. It almost does feel like there's less pressure on his shoulders this year because of his age and because it's his first Grand Tour. So if he rode Lab Welter this year and won it, for example, or even finished on the podium, can you imagine the furore around him at the following year's Tour de France in 2027? The expectations then would be even higher. In fact, you could argue, like you said, there's a point, I don't think there's going to be a point again in his career where there's less pressure on his shoulders than there will be at this year's race.
Yeah, totally. And actually, whilst having Tadej Pogacar around is a bit of a nightmare for most riders, his presence kind of takes some of the pressure off Sexas, doesn't it? So nobody can be expecting a 19-year-old to actually beat the best rider of his generation and possibly the best rider
of
all time.
Exactly, yeah. Now, beyond all of what we talked about so far, I think the reason that he gave on the social media video that announced his participation is probably the most important one, because in it, he said he wanted his grandparents to be able to watch him compete at the Tour de France at least once. He's obviously very close to his grandparents, and clearly they would have followed his career progression closer than anybody. So they're going to be so proud seeing him take the start of the race in Barcelona this July, aren't they?
That is really cool, isn't it? I think of all the reasons to ride a Tour de France, that is the most compelling and the most important one. I mean, hopefully they'll be around to watch him for years to come, but you never know, right?
No, you never know. Now, we thought we'd go through the last teenagers to have competed at the Tour de France, and it is quite rare, you've got to say, especially in the modern era. So the last teenager to ride the Tour de France was Danny van Poppel. He was just short of his 20th birthday when he first raced there back in 2013.
The last rider younger than Sexas will be when he starts to race was Fabio Battistini in 1931. So that was 95 years ago, although there was an 18-year-old started the women's Tour de France, Femme avec Zwift, wasn't it?
Yeah, Aline Roussel, back in 2024.
She was 18, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was a few months short of her 19th birthday.
She is not the youngest rider ever to start a Tour de France, though. According to Pro Cycling Stats, that was André Coutt in 1914. He wasn't actually 18
I mean, that really is bonkers, isn't it? Although, by their own admission, Pro Cycling Stats, by the way, they might be missing some names from the early years. Now, the youngest ever winner of the Men's Tour de France was also a teenager. Henri Cornet won the second edition of the race in 1904, about 10 days short of his 20th birthday.
Wow. It's safe to say, though, that the race has changed a little bit, hasn't it?
Just a little bit,
in the 122 years since that.
I was looking at it. The seven stages that made up the race that year averaged close to 400 kilometres each.
Do you remember Hank and Mark Beaumont recreated one? That's a good GCN video, actually.
It was good,
If you're on searching around, 1903...
First ever Tour de France.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the topic in hand. You've probably gathered by now that I personally am in favour of Sexas racing the Tour de France this year. I think he's more than capable physically and mentally too. In fact, he seems to thrive with pressure. Certainly doesn't seem to affect him on the big days that we've seen him in so far. But I do hope that I'm not wrong, because I would hate to see it negatively affect him over the forthcoming years of his career.
Oh, 100%. I mean, that would be awful, wouldn't it? But like you say, I mean, the Tour de France isn't what it used to be. And I think the fueling is a huge part of that.
Yeah.
Frankly, isn't
it? It's just high octane now. And as I said, he's more than capable of coping with that, I would say, day after day. And he also, like I said, doesn't have loads of pressure. And he does choose to go for stage wins or the mountains jersey or just get around the last part, he can do that. Or if they do start to see a lot of fatigue after 10 days, he could be pulled out, as many riders have been in the past.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, no, I'm excited. I'm very excited to see him there.
I think everyone is, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? I reckon Pogacar might actually have a bit of a race on his hands this year.
From Vingegaard.
And, you know, Sexas can give him a bit of trouble, can't he?
Yeah.
He's got to watch him.
He will do, definitely. It must have been a bit of an eye-opener when he saw him on his wheel up La Redoute when he did the best power to weight for 4 minutes ever.
Yeah.
Anyway, let us know your thoughts. Do you think Sexas and his team Decathlon are right to send him to the Tour de France this year? If not, why not? You can let us know in the comment section just down below.
Yeah, okay, before we move on, we wanted to show you our new addition to our print collection.
Grab it.
Dan's on it.
Here we go.
So this is to celebrate the first men's Grand Tour of the season, and it is an addition to our one-day classics prints.
Just like the previous prints, this is available in A3 size, which is what we've got here, and the smaller A4 size as well. They always come framed, as you see here too. And if you like the look of it, all you need to do is scan the QR code that's on screen now, or head to shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com, which is where you'll find our other merchandise as well.
Speaking of which, Dan, we've got these two T-shirts that, now I look at them, I seem to remember being told to wear.
We probably should have been wearing these for the show, yes.
So very cool, two special edition t-shirts, and then we've also got two special edition Camelback water bottles as well.
A lot going on at the shop, haven't we?
Yeah, check it out. Those are cool, aren't they?
Yeah, I do like those ones. Thanks very much in advance for the support if you decide to make a purchase.
Should we put the t-shirts on now
for the rest of the show?
Yeah,
we better.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Nice t-shirt, mate.
You too. Yeah. Don't tell anybody in our management.
Right, cycling shorts now. And we will start with the news from the Tracker, the third biggest gravel event in the world, Dan, I'm led to believe, after Unbound and the UCI Gravel World Championships. But it can almost definitely lay claim to being the biggest gathering of cycling influencers on the planet.
Yeah, a lot of people give it a bit of grief.
They do.
For that specifically, don't they? But if you're young and photogenic, why not post inane reels to Instagram? That's what we say.
Yeah, I mean, we're neither young nor photogenic, and we try as well, don't we?
Yeah, that's why we don't post inane reels to Instagram, sorry.
Yeah, right. Now, 4,000 people raced over the week, which is quite amazing. Yeah. And while the event still has the odd growing pain by the sound of it, I think we should be bigging it up, not moaning about it. Obviously, they've still got work to do, but I think it's cool, right?
It is still a cycling event, so after all, people will always moan.
Yeah,
they?
Well, that is true. Now, our French colleague Max finished 11th in the 560-kilometre race, finishing in 25 hours and 25 minutes. Although, one of said teething problems, he's actually been given 14th place in the official results with a time that is 30 minutes slower than he actually did.
Mm. It boasted a who's who of gravel races, apart from us, obviously, Si. Split over two main races, the 360, which is actually 325Ks long, and the 200, which was 199.2.
Yeah, Alex was quite disappointed that it wasn't 35 kilometres short as well.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Now, Rosa Closer took the 360 win, fresh off a Spring Classics campaign Kane on the road for Canyon SRAM. And then Mads Vers Schmidt took the men's race. He was running for Specialized. Cue loads of comments about how aero gravel bikes aren't necessary because he didn't have one.
Was in a shorter 200 race, which may or may not be more prestigious. We don't really know at this point, do we? Another Specialized athlete, Sofia Gomez Villafane, won the women's. Cue yet more comments about aero gravel bikes. Whilst Lucas Postelberger won the men's race.
Yeah, just ahead of a certain Nino Schurter, the greatest cross-country mountain bike rider of all time, who retired last year and is now racing gravel. He finished fifth, although he also had a pop at the organisers for the race generally being a little bit sketchy.
Kind of hard to argue that the GOAT needs to brush up on his skills as well, really, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it is quite tough. Maybe he's gone soft with all that suspension and, you know, big tyre clearance.
And being retired, yeah.
Oh, exactly,
old people again. We were talking about them earlier, weren't we?
I mean, he is quite old, Nino.
How old? 38?
Yeah, I think he's about 38, 39.
Yeah.
I mean, he's that old that I raced against him on the mountain bikes.
Yeah. When you say raced against...
I was in the same race, actually. Yeah, I mean, there's can't put too fine a point on that one. Right, there was also loads of new tech on show at the tracker. Our friend and colleague Burnett from GCN Espanol was there sniffing around the pits. He clocked the new Factor Serrana, which is their long-distance gravel bike. It's got clearance for 2.2-inch mountain bike tyres.
Looks pretty cool to me.
Yeah.
They also apparently had a new prototype Ostro gravel bike at the race, which looks to have taken inspiration from their mega aero road bike with really big, wide forks.
Yeah, BMC launched a new version of their Caius, which is their gravel race bike, and that has been updated to boost tyre clearance to 52 millimetres.
Meanwhile, Canyon also looked to have a new prototype gravel bike, a new Grail, which looked incredible as well.
It is, yeah.
Looking a bit like a gravel air road, it also has clearance for big mountain bike tyres.
Yeah, and then the other big tech story from the week is the launch of new Campagnolo Record 13 with both road and gravel variants.
Very sexy group set.
It is, lots
of carbon fibre there, super smooth looking cranks. The front derailleur is still a big unit.
Yes, it
is. But in one by setup, it is pretty heart-stopping. Check out this Orbea Terra Race that's got it on.
Yes, that is a beautiful looking bike. When I saw a picture of that drop into my inbox, I did spend a moment having a look. Orbea have got that and also their new, well, not new Orca, they've got an Orca with Campagnolo Record 13 on as well. Now, we should say, unusually for Campagnolo, this does not cost a gazillion pounds or dollars or euros to buy. Now, granted, it's no AliExpress special either, but they say it'll be comparable to SRAM Force and Shimano Ultegra DI2.
Well, comparable or less, apparently. That Orbea Terra race with Record 13 sells for £800 less than the one with Force Axis for the otherwise same specification.
That is bonkers.
Quite a lot less, isn't it?
A lot less, yeah. Very cool. I'll be happy if we get to see a bit more Campagnolo in the world.
A lot of people would. It wasn't looking good for that company.
No, it wasn't, no.
Was it?
Tell you what, mate, if Campagnolo make a comeback, maybe our 11 to 23 cassettes
might also make a comeback.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure anyone's knees will ever allow that again.
No, weird that, isn't it?
Yeah.
They don't make knees like they used to.
No. Moving on, just like Ollie Bridgewood, it turns out that Tadej Pogacar has become addicted to the gym. He said in a post-race interview at the recent Tour de Romandie that, yeah, he wasn't climbing as well as normal because he just put on a bit of muscle bulk, bulking side.
I wonder how many pull-ups he can do.
That'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Mm.
If you're watching, Tadej, show us.
Yeah. Now, unlike Pogacar, who has won 13 of his last 15 race days, something that's only been done once before, Dan was telling me, by Alfredo Binder in 1927, it does appear to have affected both Ollie's climbing and also his riding on the flat, doesn't it?
Yeah. Also, I never thought I'd mention Ollie Bridgewood and Tadej Pogacar in the same sentence, talking about something in common.
Well, and even more weirdly, that what you've just spoken about was them becoming gym bros.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Right, moving on, we're going to wish Amy and Carl Hudson all the best because they're embarking on their attempt to become the fastest couple to ride around the world. To claim the record, they need to do 18,000 miles in 150 days.
Yeah, fair play. That should be cool, that. I hope it's a nice experience for them both. As couples, you know, that'd be good. Right, last week's lead story, as we mentioned, caused a lot of comments with e-bikes potentially being top of the list. Now, part of the issue stems from an inability for people to be able to distinguish between legal and illegal e-bikes. using the term e-bike, in part because what is legal and what is not varies from country to country. And in the US, in fact, it varies state by state, doesn't it?
It's causing not only danger at the illegal end, but also it's potentially going to mess up legal e-bikes for everybody else. Los Angeles is the latest place to look at banning all e-bikes on its outdoor trails.
Yeah, it's in the early stages of making its way through all the legislative. Anyway,
so, yeah.
That process to do with legislation.
I've lost about half the audience.
It shows that resistance is building, basically, to high-powered e-bikes, but that all e-bikes risk being caught up in the problem.
Would that be a problem? We're not talking about people cycling to the shops here. We are talking about mountain biking.
Well, I mean, that is a controversial take, Dan, isn't it? But I sort of agree with you. But anyway, we'll leave that there. Speaking of controversies, if you ask around, lots of people would probably point to cyclists jumping red lights as one of the most controversial and biggest problems with safety in cities. In London, the police are issuing tickets. They announced last week that they catch about 25 riders per week jumping red lights. Mm.
But according to the Times newspaper, three times as many motorists get caught in red lights, showing that it's humans that break the law rather than their types of transport.
Yeah, now given how many more motorists than cyclists there still are in London, it's kind of not a fair comparison, nor the fact that cars can get caught by automatic cameras as well. But you are definitely right. It shows that even with the higher risk of getting caught, people driving cars still break the law with impunity. Or rather, some people driving cars.
Doesn't feel like that's going to change anytime soon, does
no.
it? Finally, it is with sadness that we report the news of the death of Alex Zanardi. He was an icon of Italian sport, starting his career as an F1 driver before a horrific crash left him with life-changing injuries.
But he then began a second career as a hand cyclist, ultimately winning double gold medals at both the London Olympics and then the Rio Olympics 4 years later.
He was a true inspiration, really, wasn't he?
He was.
And he sadly missed. It is time now for /bodge of the week. You can get involved in this part of the show by going to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader. Our first of five this week comes in from Brent, who says, I spotted this on my local Facebook marketing page. This person is obviously not an aero weenie.
No. So for podcast listeners, we're looking at a Trek hybrid with two steerer tube extenders bolted onto the front of this bike, making the handlebars. The handlebars basically look about as tall as Connor is.
There's a few things going on. One of the things, what I just chuckled at then, Si, is that they've still left some spaces on the top of the stem just in case they need to go up even further.
So how fine-tuned the position, yeah.
Don't cut it yet, just in case. And also what looks like an upward-turning bar end on one side of the bar.
Just the one bar end, though. Yeah. Now, they're obviously not an aero weenie, this person, but nor are they particularly concerned about safety, I'd argue.
No, it does look dodgy.
It does look a little bit dodgy.
Like a few hacks and bodges that come in, I'm a bit reluctant to criticise too much because it might well be that the person trying to ride this bike has got some very bad back issues, etc.
Indeed, yeah.
But it doesn't look very nice, does it?
It does not look very nice, nor... Well, yeah, nor is it particularly safe. So I think we can say bodge without... There are other types of bike out there. Like a Dutch bike.
Very true, yes.
There you go. But anyway... Yes, Board thank you for sending that one in, Brent. Neil Armstrong. Do you think that's the same Neil Armstrong that landed on the moon?
I would have thought so, yeah.
Probably, yeah. Is he still alive?
I don't know.
No, I don't know. Anyway, Neil Armstrong has sent in a 3D printed banana holder. Okay.
No.
Hello, Dan and Si, he says. Saw this 3D printed banana holder on a Facebook group I'm a member of. Looks like a solution waiting for a problem.
It does indeed.
It's a very nicely executed, shiny green iridescent 3D printed banana holder that you bolt onto your water bottle bosses.
I completely agree with Neil. It is a solution looking for a problem, isn't it? I mean, why would you need that?
No idea. It's one of those things where I feel like sometimes people have 3D printers and then look for reasons to use said 3D printer.
Yeah, well, you would, wouldn't you?
You would,
invest in a 3D printer.
It's why not? I can 3D print a banana holder, so I will.
And I would imagine that whoever that is that designed it and made it is incredibly proud of the outcome.
Well, rightly so. It's, as we said,
but we carefully selected the banana, I reckon, to fit perfectly.
True, that, yeah. It's a bit... bit green for my taste. The banana and the water bottle cage. So, I mean, I'm saying hack, because obviously...
Are you?
Well, it's 3D printed and it's, you know, it is still a solution, even if it's not really a problem anyone's got. But can I just say, possibly for the 24th time on record, I hate bananas as ride food.
Oh, you have said this a few times.
Like, they make my mouth go funny. They make me feel more hungry rather than less. Mm. It's just, it's always a bad idea, me having a banana on a bike ride.
Well, I will say bodge, just from that point of view, Si.
Okay, thanks, mate. Dreyas, solidarity.
Dreyas Ride, you reckon that is?
Yeah.
Stand Fit for Connor. This is so tall, I couldn't get a good picture in the garage. The photo studio was downsizing, and I got my hands on this heavy-duty light stand. After a bit of drilling and cutting, I attached the head of a feedback repair stand. At 191 centimetres, this makes repairs a breeze.
Repairs to what, your bottom bracket?
Yeah, well, even at 191 centimetres, it's going to be hard to adjust the saddle, I'd have thought.
Also,
it does look very tall, doesn't it?
Quite hard to get your bike up there, but it's a very nice-looking work stand.
That will be very stable, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, like, as far as like, lighting stands, I don't know why they're more aesthetically pleasing than many bike stands, but look at that.
Mm.
Polished within an inch of its life, that, isn't it?
Does look good.
Then with, like, jazzy, kind of orangey-brown bits at the bottom.
I'm going hack for that because I have a feeling that Dreyas Ride might... get a bad back from a standard bike stand at 191 centimetres tall.
Well, also, I mean, I'm not very well qualified to talk about lighting stands, but I'm pretty sure they're adjustable for height, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, you know, you could always put it lower.
I expect so, yeah.
Presumably. So, yeah, I'm going to say a hack as well. That's great. All right. Next one, sent in by Abyss DK. This is cool, all right? Hi, GCN. Inspired by Alex's AliExpress build on GCN Tech, along with various builds on GMBN, I decided to create my own take on a mountain racer. I took my old workhorse mountain bike, a Trek Excalibur 7, and transformed it into a budget-friendly gravel bike. Upgraded the fork stem, handlebar, shifters and brakes with parts from AliExpress, while the tyres and saddle were already lying around at home. Now I'm really looking forward to getting out on the gravel and hitting the forest trails. I tell you what, that's a pretty cool-looking bike,
isn't
it?
It's a very good-looking bike, I would say, yeah.
Yeah. Nicely done. I would be fascinated to know how that one rides.
Yeah.
Because they've offset the problem with mountain bikes, which is that they tend to have quite a long reach because they've got flat handlebars as opposed to drops, by fitting a microscopically short stem.
Yeah.
So hopefully that means that it will feel all right when you're riding around on it.
Yeah, I do like the look of that, so I'm definitely going to say hack.
I'm going to say hack as well, yeah.
A couple of things to finish hack or bodge with. Firstly, I lied. We only got four, not five. I thought I'd put five in. And Neil Armstrong passed away in 2012.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. So, not the Neil Armstrong, but thanks for sending it in nonetheless.
That's it, yeah. Bit late to that one, aren't we, really? 14 years.
A little bit, yeah.
It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Canbuck water bottle. Not one of these two new special edition ones, but the classic GCN
the
red.
The classic red.
The
yeah.
classic red. All you've got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below. We'll pick a winner next week. We will start, as always, with the results from last week.
This was the photo that we gave you of Remco Evenepoel, who incidentally, Si, is not now racing until the Tour de France, decided to skip the Dauphiné, or whatever that race is called
really?
These days. We're on the podium with Liège-Bastogne-Liège, about to throw a bidon, not a coveted GCN Camelback one, into the crowd. Our winner this week is Brandon Pedersen, who put, in this photo, we see Remco cursing the birds for refusing to take a pull, which I particularly liked. He is starting to get a reputation of being Mr. Angry with anyone who won't share equal turns with him at any point in a race, despite being unbelievably strong.
Yeah, it's weird that, isn't it? When you're like, why would you ride with Remco?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well done, Brandon. Get in contact on Facebook with your address. We'll send that bottle out to you. This week's photo comes from last week's Tour de Romandy. This is Groupama FDJ's David Godu.
Sorry, you've put another one in.
I have, yeah. That's for next week.
Oh, that's well, amazing. You
well
guys,
prepped.
You guys will like next week's photo.
But this is the one of David Godu, who came a bit of a cropper in the opening time trial prologue. I will get you started. When I said go do one, this isn't what I meant.
Has he put his skin suit on back to front as well? No wonder he's feeling a bit out of sorts.
It'd be a nightmare having a skin suit that somebody else is going to help you out of, isn't
it? Oh my God, yeah. Anyway, there we go. Yes, that looks like a good photo to get stuck into. Yeah. Possibly not as good as next week's. Anyway, I feel like we can't leave people hanging, but we will.
Will we? Or should we give them a sneak peek? No. So they've got a whole week to get the best captions ready.
No, because that's what they've got after the show goes up.
Right.
If you've got one sneak peek is all you need. Right, okay. see what you can do. Put your caption in the comment section down below.
Just before we let you know what's coming up on GCN this week, a few comments from last week's videos. We had quite a few serious ones underneath last week's show, including this one from Drywall Stew, who said, Simon somehow looks older than Dan. Bro needs to chill on those old people jokes.
Oh, I bet you love finding that one in the comment section, didn't you?
Do you understand what he means by bro needs to chill?
No.
No, didn't think so.
Is that because I'm too old?
Yes,
basically. Yeah.
No, we'll get on to the serious ones now. But thank you, Drywall Stew.
Yeah, I was going to say, at least someone has finally said that for you, eh, mate?
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't mean that we're now going to get an avalanche of people saying, oh, no, Dan really does look younger. Just cool it in the comments, right?
Somebody else, I didn't put this comment in, saying, at least Si is ageing gracefully and just accepting he's got a few grey hairs coming through. You need to stop dyeing your hair down. It's so obvious, effectively. I actually wrote back, said, the only time I ever dyed my hair was when I was 18. I got some bleached blonde highlights.
You should do that again.
I've got lots of grey. You can confirm up close. Just doesn't seem to always come out on camera on the side.
I've got an X-Man tufter, unfortunately. Mm. That's, anyway.
It is what it is.
It is what it is, yeah. Right, back to the job in hand. Some of those comments about the Netherlands and the fact that they're discussing mandating helmet use for certain groups of cyclists. Luca Piu said, here in the Netherlands, there has been an invasion of electric fat bikes that effectively replaced scooters, as in like mopeds. The problem is they're not regulated and can be too easily modified to go faster than 40k an hour, even without pedalling at all. So, one of many, many comments on the subject. And that's what we were saying earlier about how difficult it is to talk about this, right? Because I wouldn't call an illegal electric fat bike an e-bike because it's illegal. It's an electric motorbike, right? But I think a lot of people assume that when we were talking about e-bikes, it's encompassing everything on two wheels with a motor, basically.
Yeah, we did ruffle a few feathers last week. I think we'll probably revisit that in a not-too-distant future. This is Randerson. So, as a Dane in Copenhagen, I consider sport recreational cycling very different to commute cycling. Basically, everyone wears a helmet when cycling road, mountain bike, BMX, etc., which I, too, consider a no-brainer. Commuting by bike, on the other hand, is much more polarised in opinion when it comes to helmets. I consider it similar to walking or running. Until the local half marathon requires helmets, I believe it should be voluntary to wear a helmet.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, when you live in a country like Denmark or the Netherlands, where the cycling infrastructure is so good and so safe, it does kind of feel a little bit like that. But again, we know that a lot of you disagree vehemently on this. Sean Brooke said, so this debate again. The fact is, helmets do not make cycling safer, period. Driver awareness, cycling education, bike lights, visibility strategies and infrastructure make cycling safer. Helmets make crashing safer.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting distinction, yeah.
OneJez3982, I'm a Berlin bike commuter, I wear a helmet. I'm not for mandating helmets, but it would certainly not be a mistake. The only mistake would be making resting harder than walking, walking harder than cycling, and cycling harder than using motor traffic. Sorry, I've got a bit of dust on my computer. So if we mandate helmets for safety, we should also mandate 30 kilometres per hour in cities for cars or higher fines for endangering other people.
Yeah, and I like what he added in as well. The irony of saying that e-bikes are dangerous and that older people don't know how to handle a bike at high speeds, because if fast bikes and older people really were an issue, we should probably start by looking at driver licences. Mm. You do have to say, well, yeah, if an old person riding an e-bike is a danger to society,
very good point.
Why are we letting them drive cars? So one of them is wrong, I guess, isn't it?
Martin Holkers put, as a Dutchie, I hate to say it, but you are wrong.
God, why did we put that comment in?
Well, there was another Dutchie who said we were bang on, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah, good point.
Maybe more than one, I'm not sure. Elderly people on e-bikes are the worst combination. Sure, they get out more, but they are by default getting into risky situations by going out riding on a bike that goes 28 kilometres per hour. Reaction time is seconds. Riding side by side on bikes with huge bars, so interlocking and hitting oncoming traffic with no sense of surrounding and awareness. Those are the result of the increased death rates. And I have to say, helmets are increasingly popular with this group of bikers and will reduce the fatalities. Did go on a little bit longer, but if you wanted to look in the underneath last week's show, there were quite a lot of interesting comments.
Very interesting comments, yeah. So as Dan said, we will definitely revisit this. I mean, I was reading that comment and listening to you read it out as well. Wondering what on earth old people are like in the Netherlands, because they sound really leafy and also incredibly incompetent as well. So, I mean, I'm sure that's not what, you know, older population is like. But still, anyway, got to go see it for ourselves then, haven't we, mate, basically?
We have. Yeah, we really should pop over and do some proper investigative work at some point, shouldn't we? Yeah. Just finally, from last week's show, Motif Flet Tut per Big Cats.
Coming up soon.
That'll be the nugget at the end of the show. A reminder to sigh.
Yeah. Right, moving on underneath the Super Nerds on Superbikes feature from Saturday. Tony Mill said, for reference, AR Strong, who is the person that, well, still unfortunately holds the 51-year-old record, spoiler alert, AR Strong was Alan Strong, who actually passed away last year in Spain. He held a number of RRA records and was quite a character. And his ex-wife, Pauline, also held the Land's End to John O'Groats record and was a competitor in the Women's Tour de France.
Wow.
That's cool, isn't it? So, yeah, we couldn't find anything about AR Strong on the internet. So thank you, Tony, for filling us in on that.
Pokey 0622, that meeting you all had was an accurate depiction of useless meetings in the corporate world. Very good.
Yeah. Monster Sauna said, my ultimate red light mitigation strategy, slowly coast up to the red light, then eventually give up and unclip one foot. As soon as my toes hit the ground, the light goes green every time. Yep. Bingo. Yeah.
David Kors, how come it still feels like a headwind in inverted commas? It's like that on every out and back ride I take.
Yeah. It is weird, that, isn't it? Very true. And then underneath Connor's video from the weekend about why your new car is deadlier than your last one, why cars are getting bigger and bigger and bigger, John Fishman said, in the US, the pickup Connor was driving is considered small. Yeah, we're well aware of that. It's, the US is one step ahead of Europe, isn't it?
Multi-QWERTY. Everyone's saying new cars are safer. They forget to say that only applies to the occupants. It's the opposite for everyone around you. I think that probably could be debated. There's a lot of safety mechanisms, increasingly so in the modern sort of semi-autonomous cars, isn't there?
Yeah. That's another thing that we're going to be diving into soon, for sure. DT Cybulski said, I absolutely love what GCN is doing, addressing topics not always related to cycling, but everything around it and important for general health, safety and legislation. So there we go. Prime example of a socially responsible business.
Zoe Newsom, as an ambulance crew member here in the UK, it's really clear to see some of the differences that come out because of bigger cars. Their occupants feel cocooned, but they also can't hear our sirens and often are unaware of what's going on around them. A blue light vehicle approaching, etc. They make it more difficult for emergency surface vehicles to make progress through traffic as they take up more space on the road. And I've seen several RTCs where the occupant of a smaller car has been much more badly injured than those of an SUV. As a cyclist in a rural part of northern Scotland, on single-track roads, SUVs can be intimidating and sometimes just downright dangerous when the driver doesn't have a good grasp of the size of their vehicle. Our infrastructure simply isn't equipped to deal with much bigger vehicles. And yeah, the roads here are drastically different to most of the US, for example, aren't they?
They are indeed, yeah.
Some of them.
Yeah, well, thanks, Zoe, very much for that comment and all of you as well for leaving interesting, funny, brilliant comments under our videos over the last week.
Yep. Still enjoy watching them, 13 years on.
Yeah, true that.
Right, on the channel this week, Connor's back on Thursday with what we are calling the Tiny Tent Adventure.
And yes, all tents are tiny for Connor, but this one is particularly small.
Oh, yeah, that's all you should need to know to make sure you watch that video.
Yeah, on Saturday, as if you hadn't guessed it already, Dan's midlife crisis is carrying on apace, but now you're making a video about it.
I am making a video about it, yes. It turns out, of all of the GCN presenters, I'm the only one staring down the barrel of a potential midlife crisis due to my age. But yeah, I've been looking into why so many people tend to get into cycling in middle age, and also whether there are any risks with that, particularly if you had a job which meant that you hadn't done much exercise for years, if not decades. Is there a risk to suddenly going flat out to get, I don't know, Strava KOM or your own PR up a climb? Because you do go from sort of 0 to 60 very quickly sometimes.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I'm
speaking to a cardiologist about that.
Yeah, and then on Sunday, we mentioned it earlier on the show, Alex was out of the tracker, and we've got that video coming out for you then.
Okay, big cats.
Well,
it's a nugget.
You are all going to think I'm absolutely mad, okay? So the UK does not officially have big cats, but there are a number of big cat conspiracy theorists, including the British Big Cat Society. I was out on my...
Who you've been in contact with.
I have now. I was out on my gravel bike riding through a woodland that I don't really like near my house on the way to somewhere else. Mm. And it was 7:15 in the morning on a Sunday, and I heard a crashing in the undergrowth off to one side, and I looked over thinking, oh, this will be like the third deer that I've seen this morning. Yeah. I like seeing a deer running alongside me. So I looked over. It was not a deer. Okay, this thing was about the size of a dog, but it did not have a dog's tail. It had a cat's tail.
Dogs are quite different in size. What are we talking?
A big dog.
A big dog.
Size of a big dog, and but you know how dog's tails are quite sort of stiff, like waggy but stiff, yeah. And then cat's tails are like swishy. Yeah. They're like feline. This thing had a cat's tail. Right. The size of a big dog with a cat's tail, and I was there riding along, going, "What on earth is that?" And my conclusion after 3 hours of gravel riding was I'd spotted a big cat. So when I got home, I Googled it. I'm not the first person to have spotted a big cat in Broccoli Coombe Wood. And then when I started digging a bit deeper, the sightings of big cats in the UK are increasing dramatically. Mm. So I added mine to the British Big Cat Society database.
Any? I know you didn't get video evidence, but anybody else got video evidence?
Well, no, not in those
words. It's a bit like UFO sightings seem to have gone down since the advent of having a camera in your pocket at all times.
That's a good point, actually. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm going to go back out there. We thought we might send Connor off with his tiny tent. But anyway, yeah, so you'll all think I'm completely crazy, but I am now convinced that there are big cats living in the UK.
Yeah, but he's not going to be able to convince himself anymore because he's not going back to that woods, are you?
Well, I mean, I always thought they were slightly spooky woods, yeah. And then now I've just seen a British puma or a British panther. I don't know what it was, but anyway.
Very nice nugget, sir.
Thanks.
The good news is,
if there are any other big cat spotters out there in the UK, then please let me know in the comment section down below. We can discuss amongst ourselves.
I was going to say, the good news for you, sir, is that there are only 19 people currently watching that now think you're crazy. So, yeah. For the rest.
None of them who work for Qantas. We found out last week.
Oh, no, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean,
there were
a lot of comments under the GCN show last week. So maybe someone from Qantas did write in and we missed it because they were like,
expand all comments and do a command F to find Qantas. All right.
There we go. Right. We'll see you next week, won't we?